The weekend is near and the next round of footy is finally upon us. And your ultimate guide to all the upcoming action lies within the Fox Footy Podcast Bunker. Welcome to Match Committee.
Hallelujah, the finals have arrived in the Fox Footy Podcast Bunker. We're very excited to bring you a full preview ahead of week one, starting with the Eagles and the Dogs on a Thursday night. Are the Eagles the form team of the final series, even though they finished outside of the top four? And what about the mighty Friday night clash between the Cats and the Hawks? Can the Cats get the Kennett curse back up and going? We'll discuss those two games and the other two in the Thursday match committee and maybe a little bit of other fodder as well. G'day everyone, I'm Ben Waterworth and two very esteemed panellists have joined me in the Fox Footy Podcast Bunker to have a look at the weekend of footy. Firstly, let's welcome the most charismatic TV sports reporter in the business and aspiring Essendon Best and Fairest MC, Julian De Stoop. Hello, Jules.
I should have got that gig this year. I was a bit stiff. What do you think of the week off?
It took me a couple of takes to get this introduction to the podcast right, so I'm Rusty Jules. What about you?
I think what Gil's done here is, what he's done, he's done a favour for everyone in the industry, the males that have partners.
So you
get away for the weekend, you get some brownie points. September's a very busy month.
There's also Father's Day on the Sunday
Father's Day as well. You know, you've got functions in September you've got to go to, but you just soften the blow because you have a weekend before it all starts with your other half. So I think what he's done is, that's quite a good move by Gil.
Well, it's a left of field perspective I hadn't heard this week so far, Jules. Hello to Anna Harrington, of course, foxfooty.com.au. Did you enjoy, well, somewhat, I know you were in the office for a bit, but did you enjoy the weekend off?
Yeah, I had a great weekend off. Of course, it wasn't all off footy. I went down to the women's game at Witten Oval. It was one of the best contests I've seen all year. And I know we're all missing footy, but if you're looking for something that's exciting, at least we got that. It was, probably one of the best games I've seen at least in the past month, if not the last few weeks.
I'll tell you what, it was a good game too. The Essendon Geelong VFL game was one of the better games I've seen this year. That was a
because of the result.
Not
as well.
Just the result. The game was fantastic.
Yeah, it was.
It was kicking goals from everywhere, high scoring. It was a great game of footy.
VFL finals are great to watch, and local footy numbers, as we heard from Gil during the week, was certainly up. But just on the women's game as well, Harrow, I was blown away. We talked about it a bit in the office, but I was blown away by the tempo and the intensity in the, particularly during that first half of Witten Oval.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there are a couple of contributing factors. Other than them, you know, just wanting to get out there and play, they had the 16 aside, which has caused drama all this week. I know Julian De Stoop is a huge fan of that.
God's sake.
And that worked out really well, because that's just because with women's footy, you tend to need that extra kick to take it from one to the other. They went hard. They were just fired up and ready to go. It was a really fast-paced game, really exciting. And I think shorter quarters, it just meant that they could sort of go hard and not have to see out, say, half an hour worth of footy at a time.
It was fantastic viewing, and the numbers from a TV perspective and also from crowd attendance perspective certainly showed that women's footy is here to stay. Let's turn our attention, though, to the top eight. The finals kick off this Thursday night with the Eagles and the Dogs. Before we have a look at the specific four games, match committee big call time, Julian. We already know that the Dogs and the Eagles selections, and there's some big ins for the Dogs, it has to be said as well. But for the other three games, Jules, is there a big call? Any player from any club who should be dropped / picked?
Well, I love what the Dogs have done. I know it is a risk, but if you look at the five ins, there's probably only two risks there, the McRae and Liberatore. I mean, Stringer's been playing footy. Mm. Easton Wood only got injured in the second last game of the season, but that's what Luke Beveridge does. He's bold. He's taking a risk, and I think it's great. And I think North have to do the same with Jared Waite. He has to play. And I think if we go back to that final last year, in the second quarter, Jared Waite actually swung that game. His hands were brilliant that day. He was probably the most influential player on the ground. Look, when he's coming off injury, he's not always great, but I think they just have to take that risk, even if he's 90% fit and play him this week. If they were really bold, they would drop Drew Petrie, but I don't think they're going to do that.
Should they drop Drew Petrie, though?
I think they should. I think Mad Jack's very unlucky to miss out, and I think he will miss out.
That was the hunch we got in the presser the other day.
Yeah, definitely. And look, people are saying, oh, Mad Jack might crack it and not be there next year. But look, Petrie won't be there. He'll get his opportunity next year. But I think on pure form, he's ahead of Petrie at the moment.
What about your big call, Harrow?
Well, if the teams hadn't already been picked, I would have said Jake Stringer. But I'm actually, I'm going to agree with Jules on this one. I think Jared Waite's the call they have to make. We've seen Ben Brown has hit some fantastic form in the past few weeks. Having Majak Dore there as the key forward, or an out-of-form Drew Petrie as the other main man, means that Brown will get that number one key defender, and it could, reduce his efficiency. But if you've got Jared Waite there and he's firing and he's sticking his boot into defenders' backs, you've got to put someone good on him, because as Jules said, if he fires, he can swing the course of a game. But if you manage to shut him down, then that just gives Brown, with his athleticism, a chance to get the second best key defender and maybe provide that point of difference.
Well, we'll get to that game a little bit later on, and we will talk a little bit more about Ben Brown, who is certainly one of the most improved key forwards in the competition this season. But let's start with the Friday night game, Jules. Geelong and Hawthorn. We all know that the big rivalry, particularly since, I think, the 2008 grand final, this rivalry is just gone to a new level. The Hawks have won three out of their past four finals against the Cats, but Geelong probably enter as one of the form teams, if not the form team in the competition, just simply because of their record and ability to beat top eight sides this season.
Absolutely, and Scott Lucas did a really interesting thing on the radio last night talking about this, and he said, you know, Hawks are 6-4, which is a pretty good record, really, yeah. But their percentage is only 86 against the top eight this year, where Geelong's 126. So you can see the Hawks have scraped across the lines and then got some beltings in the other games against top eight sides. So logic says Geelong should win this game, but the anomaly now is the weather. But I think people are underestimating the Cats. They're a very good wet weather
side. Well, we were talking about this off air beforehand, that a lot of people think that the weather will probably play into Hawthorn's hands because they don't have a lot of big, you know, particularly key forwards, and they've got those small forwards who've done a fantastic job, Bruce Pioppolo and Rioli this year, not only kicking goals, but applying that defensive pressure. But as you mentioned beforehand, Geelong's a very good wet weather side.
Well, they are. I mean, Bartell, Selwood, Dangerfield, Caddy's a good wet weather player. There's not many bad wet weather players in that Geelong side. I think it means they probably won't play Henderson. I don't think there's a need to play him. Don't take that risk, and they can go a little bit smaller. So, look, the Hawks won't be disappointed it's wet, but I don't think it's going to be a major advantage to them.
Yeah, I'm a bit torn on this one. I think the Hawks are going to find a way to get it done, to everyone's disappointment,
I think. Apart from Riley.
Yeah.
The only non-Hawthorn supporter that wants them to win.
Yeah, our good friend Riley Beveridge loves the Hawks, which is interesting. But yeah, no particular reason in terms of why I think the Hawks might win. I just think that they just tend to find a way to deliver in these games. Geelong have that sort of burden of expectation. Jules just mentioned in terms of percentage, close games. The Hawks generally do find a way to get over the line in those close ones, but it really depends. If Geelong get their big few players firing and up and running through the midfield, then I think it's all going to be going one way.
Mark Thompson on 360 last night, Jules, said that he's almost expecting a fall from grace, that he thinks that not playing their best football isn't far away for the Hawks. Do you think that is imminent? Do you think that might be something that happens over the next couple of weeks?
I don't think so. I just don't think they've reached that level this year, and it's not going to suddenly happen. That's not saying I'm ruling them out from doing great things in September, yep. Because even their 90% is pretty good. But really, how many games have they played really well this year? Maybe the Swans game at the SCG.
And the Hawthorn, Eagles in round two.
Yeah, the Eagles in round two, but not many.
Yep.
So, look, I'm not ruling them out, but I think I'd be still surprised if they got up and won the flag this year.
The Hawks will want to probably break even in the middle of the ground. We all know about their contested ball struggles this year, but if they are able to break even, bring the ball to ground and lock the ball in their forward half with that manic pressure that Riley Beveridge did mention for foxfooty.com.au earlier on in the week, they're a big, big chance. But you mentioned health and injuries as well, Anna, just beforehand. Schoenmakers, Gibson, Frawley, Stratton, McAvoy all probably expected to play, but they're certainly not, from what we can gather, not going in at 100% fitness.
No, and I think McAvoy will be the huge one to lose. If it's going to be wet, his total lack of pace isn't an issue. But if he can't play, you're relying on Jack Fitzpatrick and Pinsonet to do the job. And we know that Fitzy isn't exactly the hugest bloke going around. Do you think guys like Smith and Stanley will just be able to shove him around and really increase that contested ball differential? They really need McAvoy to get up, and they need him to be able to play that kick behind a play sort of role. If they're not able to move the way that they normally will, they're just going to be total liabilities.
Do they need to play Schoenmakers if it's wet?
I don't think so.
You got Sicily and Gunston.
Yeah,
I wouldn't play him.
No, I don't think so either. I think he's probably missed too much football in general. I know he's a premiership player and was a fantastic story last year, but he's missed too much football. And I think they should trust Sicily, and they should trust that younger, more hybrid type of forward line that I think worked really, really well for them this year. And you think there's an unhealthy reliance still on that big four, Jules, when we talk about Hodge, Mitchell, Burgoyne and Lewis, who have seemed to get that team over the line on many occasions this year.
Yeah, I think that's probably a fair call. They need Smith, Hill, these sort of players to play really well tomorrow night. The interesting one, I think Shields is probably the man for Dangerfield. They don't really play a hard tag, the Hawks, but he's one of the best tacklers going around and can run with him. But from a Geelong point of view, who plays on Cyril? Does Enright get the job like he has in the past, or do you keep a Jed Buse in the side for that role?
Yeah, well, in the past, Enright has played on him, but Cyril's a different kind of player now, and so is Enright to a certain extent. Buse has done a fantastic job on Eddie Betts this year. Now, Betts and Rioli, sort of different players. Probably Cyril maybe covers the ground a little bit quicker than what Betts does, but still that mercurial kind of player. Buse has shut Betts down both times. So that would give, I think, Chris Scott a lot of confidence if he did want to keep Jed Buse in to play him. We'll watch in that space with plenty of interest on Friday night, as we will on Thursday night at Subiaco Oval, the Eagles and the Dogs. You mentioned, Jules, beforehand, the team selection conundrums. And David Parkin on Lead Team said last night that it seemed like a panicked decision to bring in Wood, Liberatore, Stringer and McRae all back at the same time with very little footy preparation under their belts.
Yeah, look, there's two ways of looking at it. I think it's a calculated risk and good on the Bulldogs. And I think the Bulldogs are a genuine chance tonight. Their footy stands up in finals.
Yep.
They defend really well. My still the biggest worry, and I know, you know, the Eagles forward line looks pretty good, but even if they restrict the Eagles to, say, 80 points, can the Dogs score 80 points?
No.
That ground is a tough ground to score on. Obviously, Stringer back hopefully will help, but that's still my biggest concern, them kicking a winning score in this game.
I think when you're coming into an elimination final and you're well and truly the underdogs, you've got to roll the dice. I don't know if all of those players will actually end up playing. If they're fit, they'll make the call. And I think, as you said earlier, guys, that a lot of them have been playing a lot of footy. It's only McRae and Liberatore are the ones that have really missed a fair chunk of it. They were awful against Freo last week. So if you're just looking from a pure selection point of view, you've got to make wholesale changes after losing to a bottom four team. And if you're bringing in guys that are of this quality, it's finals footy, could potentially be your last roll of the dice. They're not going to get a second chance if they stuff it up. So if they're not confident that the guys that they're taking out of this side can't do the job, I think Rover a little bit unlucky. But
yep.
I think if you can't back in the guys that you had last week to do the job and you've got these quality players, a lot of them are, you know, upper echelon type footballers, you got to bring them in.
And for the Dogs, they won't say this internally, but they can take a risk this year. It's not about them winning the flag this year. With everything that's happened to them, if they could win a final, that would be a major achievement. So I think, unlike other years, if you're in the top four and a real chance, you'd probably hold them back. But take a risk. Why not?
So is 2016 a pass mark for the Dogs? Result aside on Thursday night, is it a pass mark for the Dogs this year?
Yeah, I think so. I think everything that's gone against them, if you look at their injuries and how they've handled it compared to a North Melbourne in the second half of the year that have had similar injuries and haven't handled it, I think start of the year next year, they'd be one of my favourites for the Premiership. If they get their play, you know, Bob Murphy comes back, Cramery obviously comes back. I think they're really well placed for next year. And if they win tonight, it's a bonus, really.
Mm. Age-wise, personnel-wise, all things leading to dominance in the next couple of years for the Dogs. So they'll be a great club in the future years. The Eagles, though, I think they've probably got more to play for tonight. They are arguably one of the form teams of the top eight heading into this final series. They've won 9 of their past 10, Harrow, but their past 3 wins against the Giants, the Hawks and the Crows have been super, super impressive, and I think have made us all take notice of the Eagles once again.
Absolutely. I think last week a lot of people were saying, oh, you know, West Coast had a good win over Hawthorn. Adelaide should do them. West Coast, I've just been so impressed with them. Tom Barras winning his Rising Star nomination, I just thought, added another level to that defence, allowed McGovern to just sort of do his thing and rebound and take intercept marks, which I think is a real key for them. Josh Kennedy's just in superb form, and what I really like about the Eagles is they do play Subi to perfection. I think not enough people talk about the way that they set up that forward line. I've watched, obviously, a lot of footy with the D's this year where you see guys like Jesse Hogan playing from behind, trying to take contested marks. But the Eagles just reward you for getting out on the lead and making space. I think the Eagles are playing really good footy. They're tough to beat around the stoppages. Jules' man, Jonathan Giles, was absolutely superb.
Now, this is what I wanted to bring up. We're in a very small room here in the podcast
bunker. After 2 weeks, you'd forget.
But there's a big elephant in this room, Jules. Jonathan Giles, how impressive was he against the Crows?
Very impressive.
Yes.
But let's see if he can just take it up a level in a game that will go up a level. But no, he was fantastic. And I didn't see any of that at Essendon from Johnny Giles. But he didn't get many chances, to be fair. But no, he was very good. I was wrong on that occasion. He was excellent.
To be fair, three clubs, including Essendon, had already made the call on Jonathan Giles. So it's not like our man Jules was in bad company. But I think it's going to be really interesting, that ruck battle, because the Bulldogs, I wouldn't say that their ruck is exactly their strength.
Not.
You've got guys like Roughhead pinch hitting in there.
Tom Boyd.
And Tom Boyd going in there. And, you know, it's not the same as having Nick Natanui. But if you can put guys like Luke Shuey and Andrew Gaff on the front foot and attacking from the get-go, all of a sudden it just becomes so difficult to put pressure on those midfielders and to stop them getting that quick kick forward to a hard leading Kennedy or Darling. And that's something that the Dogs are going to have to be really good. And you'd think that's why they do want to take that risk on Liberatore, because I saw when they played the Ds, he had something like 20 tackles. He just gets in, he shuts it down, he creates pressure. If you can get someone like that in and involved, it will go a long way to shutting down someone like a Shuey.
I reckon the bye's interesting with this game. I reckon you got a team that they didn't want to stop playing. Why would the Eagles want to stop playing? They've had three massive wins. Now they've had to wait 13 days, where for the Dogs, it was perfect. It allows Libba to play. It allows McRae to play. They were coming back from Perth. Some of the young kids that have probably played a bit more footy due to injury, the Dunkleys, get a bit of an extra rest. So I think it's a team that loves this bye versus a team that didn't want to stop playing. So the first quarter and a half will be interesting to see how that plays out.
Luke Beveridge, I think, originally wasn't a huge fan of the bye.
Aren't they funny coaches? When their situation changes.
I reckon Hawthorn coach Alistair Clarkson, who's probably the most vocal out of a lot of them, might be even happier than Luke Beveridge, is able to get a guy like Ben Stratton up for the game against Geelong. Funny how the footy world works sometimes.
That's one good thing about the bye, though. I love the fact that we're going to see some elite players get a chance to play. When these games were last week, some of those players wouldn't have got up. And I think that's a good part of it. We want to see the best players playing in finals.
I think Mark Hutchings was on AFL Tonight the other night, and he was saying he would have liked to have had that bye 4 weeks ago rather than this week. And you can understand that, because you think a few guys that teams like the Dogs or Crows or Eagles that were just trying to either get a top four spot or make sure they're in the eight would have been taking risks on players and maybe not playing them when they're completely fit. I think the bye now comes at a really handy time in terms of getting players up. But you wonder how it could have been shaped if this bye came a few weeks ago rather than now.
Let's move ahead to the Saturday game. And I don't think the AFL couldn't have asked for a better scenario Jules, with the Swans and the Giants taking on each other. I reckon preferably at the SCG, but at ANZ Stadium nonetheless. What's a pass mark, do you reckon, for the crowd? I know there's only about less than 10,000 seats and tickets are available still.
Well, it's better than I thought. I thought originally 50, 55, but now 60 is going to be pass mark. Yeah. Maybe even 65, which would be fantastic. So I think this game will see this rivalry born. It's not really a rivalry at the moment. We've seen it's either a final gets a rivalry born, like Geelong Hawthorn 89, or some biffo. I mean, West Coast Freo didn't come alive really until Dale Kickett tried to punch the whole side. So I think this game will be physical, and it's a final, and we'll see this rivalry really born.
So will it be for a final for Biffo on Saturday, do you think?
Well, not only be Biffo, but you got Mumford there, and you know, I think it'll just be a really good physical game, big crowd, and suddenly people in Sydney will think, hang on, this is a genuine rivalry instead of just two local teams playing.
Well, I'm very similar to my good friend Riley Beveridge in that I love a chance to sledge Sydney sporting crowds as often as possible, because they do not rock up. They're fickle.
It'll rain in Sydney. It always does for big events.
Yeah, exactly. They don't, you know, they don't like rocking up to crowds as soon as things don't go their way. But I agree with Jules in that I think this could really be the making of the rivalry. You look at, obviously, soccer has more of a grassroots feel in Sydney, but the way that they brought in the Western Sydney Wanderers and were able to create that rivalry sort of between those two different sets of fans, it was just remarkable. And I think there's a real possibility to do that with the Giants. I think they've worked really hard to get involved in grassroots, to build that community, to really make it a them versus us sort of feel in terms of, you know, Western Sydney identity. And I think that could actually go a long way. If the Giants win this final, it will be huge in terms of cementing that supporter base. I know some people up in Sydney who have made the call to follow them.
There's been a lot of chat about the experience differential between the two sides in terms of finals experience. So the Swans have 23 players on their list who have a combined finals experience worth of 223 games, whereas the Giants have just six players on their list who have played 68 finals together. So that's a big differential there. But in terms of the actual average age in games, Jules, in round 23, Sydney were ranked seventh for both average age and average games, and the Giants weren't far behind. They were actually ranked ninth for age and ranked sixth for games as well. So it's hard to sort of get a gauge on it, not being former players. Of course, you being a former Moorabark star on the Eastern Football
League. Baronia, thank you.
Baronia, sorry. Living in the Moorabark area, though.
Going to school in the Moorabark area,
but does that have do you think they'll have a big effect that there's not as many players from a volume perspective who have played finals for the Giants compared to the Swans?
Well, I think there's a couple of parts to that, too, is the Swans have six or seven players that haven't played finals. Mm. And the other thing is, you look at these Giants players haven't played finals, the Cornelios and Camerons of the world, but a lot of 20, 21-year-olds that are coming into finals have played 20 games. They're 80, 90 game players. Mm. They've played in big games. They're confident kids. They're all high draft picks, so they're used to being elite. So I don't think that's going to be as big a factor as some of the other factors in this game, like ANZ Stadium. Bigger ground should suit the Giants. Yep. Swans don't like playing there. They don't lose many finals there. So that's another factor in this game. And even the lead-in. Sydney's lead-in is probably a little bit softer, that game against Richmond. They played North, who played pretty well that day, where the Giants had a really tough lead-in, which might hold them in good stead. So I think there's a few anomalies in this game which might be a bit more significant than the finals experience.
Speaking of lead-ins, Sydney's lead-ins compared to 12 months ago to the final series, respective final series, have been totally different, Anna. They limped into last year's final series and didn't have, obviously, Lance Franklin in that side, Luke Parker and a couple of other really key players. They come into this final series basically almost at full fitness and with Buddy arguably in career-best form at the moment.
Yeah, he's been absolutely superb. And it was amazing that the Swans didn't nominate him as one of their three MVP nominations. He's arguably the most... I was talking about this with Tommy Morris. He's arguably the most valuable player in the league. If he goes down, Sydney go down. Like, you've got Parker, Hanbury, Kennedy. I don't think Hanbury actually got in either. It's Brampy got in. But you've got all these great midfielders and players that can play a role. You don't have another Buddy Franklin.
That is one of the biggest jokes of all time. If you go to Leon Cameron this week and say, Leon, you can take one player out of the Sydney side. Is he going to pick Dane Rampey or Buddy Franklin? Come on.
I think he'd be picking the big Budweiser is my hunch. So we might have a chat with
Key the... Key forwards, mate. They don't get enough respect.
Might have a chat with the Corporate Affairs and Communications Manager at the AFL Players Association, Harry.
It's falling apart.
Yeah, the bald man, he needs to have a good talking to about it all, I feel.
And Patrick Cripps didn't get in Carlton's top three either.
Really?
No, Bryce Gibbs, Cade Simpson, Sam Doherty.
Well, that actually, I'm looking forward to seeing how that Carlton best and fairest plays out because the four of them, that'll be a very tight race.
That'll be a really good race.
That's over in the next couple of days as well. But let's get back on track, straighten up the tat. And the Adelaide and North Melbourne game on Saturday night is almost sort of... It feels like the forgotten game of the four because I suppose because of North Melbourne's fall from grace since round 10 and in particular the veterans, well, they won't be recontracted for next year. And it almost felt like, as some people have observed, Jules, in recent weeks, that North have almost conceded this final series.
It's really interesting. And Drew Petrie was great the other day. He was so honest and he made a pitch for himself to play and he spoke about... he's been their best finals player over the last 2 years. That's un-Drew Petrie-like. Yeah. Normally in the past, you'd say, yeah, I'm confident I'll play, but that's not my call. It's up to the selectors. So I'm not sure that's the sort of attitude you want to hear.
He's arced up a bit.
Well, I just think players are sort of looking after their own backyard, probably because they're a bit pissed off. So I'm not sure Brad Scott would have liked hearing that. So it's a really weird dynamic North Melbourne are going into this final series with. And we're just talking upstairs with Adelaide's number one ticket holder, Tom Chadwick.
Yes.
It would be one of the biggest upsets in finals for a long time if North Melbourne won this game.
And there's no one more nervous than Tom Chadwick.
He's already got them in the prelim, yet he's nervous they won't win this game. He's like, we'll beat the Giants next week. So suddenly the Giants can't beat Sydney, apparently. So I've got no idea what he's talking about.
Good afternoon to Tom Chadwick, if he's listening as well. Just on the ruse as well, and we mentioned their fall from grace since round 10. They're 2-9 since the last 11 games as well. They've only beaten St Kilda and Collingwood, whereas Adelaide, one of the form teams of the comp, yes, they went down to West Coast, but you can't ignore their past form. They were 9-2 with a percentage of almost 150%. So if things sort of go to plan on paper, it could get quite ugly on Saturday night.
It really could. I think you've got guys like Rory Sloane, who would have just been so filthy about missing that clutch game to finish the season. Brody Smith would make a huge impact to have him, just in terms of that rebounding and extra run and drive. Yeah, and it is a weird one with North Melbourne. We know that they're always going to be very strong around the contest, and that's where someone like Sloane coming back in is crucial for Adelaide. But it's whether they've got the flair. Early days this year, we saw that three-pronged forward line work really well. But since then, you know, Waite's been injured half the time. They've got to bring him in if he's fit. Ben Brown has really developed and become a real key forward. But you just got to wonder whether they have the X factor. You know, guys like Zeeble can step up when it's needed. But I just don't know if they've got the firepower that Adelaide have. Adelaide have so many players that can jump up and play a role. And you even got guys like Young McGovern who can pop up and kick a couple of goals here and there. It's really hard to see where North can sort of get the inspiration. Although they have beaten them this year to sort of drag this one over the line.
They should have lost by 100 points over in Adelaide, though. They dominated that night. And look, if you look at the second half of the year, you've probably got the second best side in the comp, even though Adelaide dropped to fifth. Where would North be? 13th? 12th?
Yeah,
I mean, they're behind
well,
the Saints,
the top
they're behind
eight.
Melbourne, they're probably behind Collingwood. That's why it's such a big mismatch. What's Brad's got up his sleeve, though? Last year, I think he coached so well against Richmond.
Yeah.
Hasn't got Jacobs, unfortunately.
Hopefully, Dumont can fill that role.
Yeah, Dumont plays on spot. And Gibson did that job on Ellis last year. I'm not sure who he goes to at Adelaide. Does he go to a Brody Smith and try and chop him out playing a half-forward role? They haven't really got that dynamic outside runner, have they? I mean, Atkins is a good young player. So it's interesting to see if he's got a couple of things up his sleeve to try and limit the Crows.
I don't think, I'm not sure if Paul Seedsman will get in there, the seed, but he might.
Get Les in.
He could have been maybe the man that that Gibson could have gone to, Harrow.
I think the thing that they could really look to shut down with Adelaide is negate the role of guys like a Tom Lynch who play that important link-up role at half forward. Him and Tex both obviously roam up the ground, and if you can cut off that bit of flow there, it might just sort of get Adelaide off kilter a little bit in this final, because that's the way they like to play. They like to use those couple of kicks to get forward. They like to use someone like Lynch and his decision making to hit up the right option inside 50 rather than bomb it long. If you can start cutting off that link player, and then you have someone back to try and intercept, that's where you can sort of get a bit of an advantage. But I think if you let Adelaide get that run, you let them get that link up play, they're going to be very difficult to stop.
Do they defend deeper? I mean, I know teams like to press, but we saw Adelaide, when they couldn't get out the back against West Coast, they didn't really have a plan B. So keep Tarrant back. Do they even just bring a line back and just defend deeper and play it a bit more one-on-one?
I think they've had two weeks
to work on this on the track. That's the other event. There's three or four big training sessions clubs can have and really study the opposition. So it'd be interesting to see what Brad Scott's done in the last couple of weeks to try and do something different, because he has to do something different. Otherwise, they're going to get flogged.
Defensively, they're stand north and they've got an array of key defenders who can stay back and I think are reliable down back as well. And Scotty Thompson's a great little player there. Tarrant's one of the best intercepts in the comp. Almost made that All-Australian side. Ferrito, you know, he played okay against GWS. He can probably give them that drive, but Lockie Hansen's a great interceptor as well. So they're not bereft of options down there. Just quickly before our tips, what's our hunch on, firstly, I think Brent Harvey and Nick Dal Santo. Of course, Dal Santo on Channel 9 last night said he was aware of rival offers that had come his way. So do we expect maybe both of them to be playing on next year at another club?
It's really hard to get a read, isn't it? I think, well, Harvey's left the door open, and I'd love to see him go on, and I think he should. Dal Santo, I think Collingwood would be a good fit. They need a good ball user. And, you know, it's Steve Johnson Rowley plays for a year, 2 years, and he wants to be a coach. So I that sort of makes sense for me, a team like Collingwood that could use a really smart user of the footy. But I still got the feeling Dal Santo won't play next year.
Yeah, it's a hard one with Dal Santo. Harvey, I think he'll make the decision at the end of this final series, to be honest, because I think when you put your heart and soul and everything out there on those do-or-die games, that's when you sort of figure out what you want to do. Dal Santo, obviously the options are there. I'd say a team like Melbourne could use him. They've been linked with Scott Thompson, who's another in-and-under player, but I think they need more quality ball users. Collingwood in a similar position. They've got a lot of players who shank kicks. But I know, I think with Dal Santo, for him, it's going to be a question of, do you want to be a guy that was a real St Kilda gun for a long time and then finished your career off really well at North Melbourne, or do you want to be a guy that went into a third club and the end of your career almost became a bit journeymanish? Like, it's going to be a decision for him to make. If he's slowing down, then you've got to make the call one way or the other on what terms you go out on.
He reminds me a bit of Stevie J. His second half of the year was a lot better than the first. You would have said halfway through the year he's gone. But speaking of the Demons, geez, Brent Harvey would be good at Melbourne next year.
He would be.
I think that's a good fit for Brent
or
Harvey.
The D's or the Dogs or
D's
the Giants?
D's or Dogs for me. I think, Stevie J I don't think is going to play on, so he would be a good replacement for him. But I really like to see Brent Harvey at the D's. Someone brought it up yesterday. I thought that's really good fit. They don't
have
great
small
forwards. I mean, Kennedy didn't have a great year after a good start. Obviously, they got Garlett, who's in and out as well. I think he'd be great.
And I like that. I like what both of you said about Dal Santo at Collingwood. Collingwood's biggest weakness at the moment is kicking from defence, and Dal Santo.
So you put
him
at halfback?
I would put him at halfback. Probably not as bad on the body. Probably doesn't get showed up for pace too much.
Yeah, that's
I would
a good
have
call.
So Dal Santo off halfback would work quite nicely at the Pies.
Harvey would probably be good at the D's just because they're turning into a real niggly little team as well, a real annoying, scrappy, love a bit of, causing a bit of trouble. Guys like Bernie Vince, our great friend Adam Baldwin's favourite player in the AFL, Dean Kent.
Tommy Bug.
Tommy Bug. They've got a lot of mongrel about them, and Boomer brings that, but he also brings skill and smarts with the ball, which the D's can be similar to Collingwood in that sense, in terms of turning it over and their decision-making. So having someone that's hovering around 70 to 50 metres out who uses the ball well and makes good decisions would really add another level to that side.
Let's go through our tips for this weekend, Julian, starting with you, your four respective tips, and obviously the first game, the Eagles and the Dogs.
I'm going to be a bit boring. I'm going all the favourites. I hope I'm wrong. I like to see an upset. But the Eagles tonight, maybe four goals. Cats, tight one, 15 points. I think Giants are over the odds. They're about $3. That's not quite right, given what they did to Sydney, 10 weeks ago?
Yep, round 12.
So Swans for me by maybe about 15 points, and Adelaide will win by 55.
Excellent. The Crows for Tom Chabot to get the win there. Taken to another level with the margins as well. Nice work.
If they lose, I worry for Tom next week.
I don't want to come in on Monday.
I'm going to set my arm around him. I think he's going to be very dear.
I don't want to come in on Monday. I don't think the production crew for the late AFL Tonight shift will be very happy
about
it.
Take the day off.
What about you, Anna?
I think the Eagles will get the job done over the Dogs. I think it'll be a really good contest early on, but I think just the advantage at Subi, the Eagles will win. I'm going to go with about four goals, I reckon. I was thinking Hawthorn earlier, but now I reckon just that
Swader.
Contested.
Yeah. Swader in half an hour.
No, I wouldn't say that you guys swayed me. I think I've just weighed it up a bit more. I won't give anyone else credit for my change of thoughts. I think it's going to be really tight, though. I think Geelong will get over the line, but it'll be by about 8 points. It's not going to be much at all. Swans v Giants. So I agree with Jules that it's very much over the odds. I think the Giants will really take it up to them. But I do think Sydney's experience will play out. But then I think if the Giants lose, they will beat potentially Adelaide up at home the next week. So I think the Giants are they lack the finals experience. They might lose the first game, learn from it, win their second final. And then I think Tom Chadwick will be happy for at least 1 week because I think Adelaide will get the job done over North by about 40 points.
Not even the podcast, and Riley and Chatty have probably got more mentions than they would have been if they were in the podcast.
A couple of drive-bys. What about your tips, Ben?
Great man.
I know you don't normally give them, but finals time, you've got to give
them. I like most of your tips except the Giants for mine. I've got a funny feeling the Giants would might just jump the Swans. I think the Swans might be a little nervy, but the Giants for mine, they could do some damage on that ANZ Stadium. I know the Swans don't like playing on it as well. So just a hunch. I think if there's an upset, I think it's going to be the Giants against the Swans. Well, that's been our look at the finals week one, and we're certainly looking forward to it. You'll see every game live on Fox Footy. Make sure you check out Jules' work, of course, on AFL Tonight, right throughout the week on Fox Sports News, and read Anna's work at foxfooty.com.au. Thank you, team. We'll be back next week. And remember to keep clicking back to foxfooty.com.au and follow us on Twitter at foxfootylive.